The reading is Genesis chapter 29, verses 1 to 30, and it can be found in the church Bibles on page 30 and 31. Jacob arrives in Padan Aram. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the field, with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. The stone over the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob asked the shepherds, "My brothers, where are you from?" "We are from Haran," they replied. He said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" "Yes, we know him," they answered. Then Jacob asked them, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." "Look," he said, "the sun is still high. It is not time for the flocks to be gathered. Water the sheep and take them back to pasture." "We can't," they replied, "until all the flocks are gathered and the stone has been rolled away from the mouth of the well. Then we will water the sheep." While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel's daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home, and there Jacob told him all these things. Then Laban said to him, "You are my own flesh and blood." Jacob marries Leah and Rachel. After Jacob has stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, "Just because you are a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than some other man. Stay here with me." So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is completed, and I want to lie with her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob. And Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you've done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, and then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work." And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he worked for Laban another 7 years. This is the word of God.
Great. Thank you, Gillian. Beautifully read for us this morning. And we are doing our study on the life of Jacob. And this is our theme this morning, the marriage deception. But I want to begin with a question. If you have the next slide, please, Nick. What connects my father-in-law, John, who's actually here this morning, our Eurovision Song Contest entry this year, What the Hell Just Happened, and Laurel and Hardy? Well, the answer is Genesis 29. And I'm going to explain a little bit more. You know when you plan a sermon, you think, I'm going to tell a story about my in-laws, and then they decide to visit you that weekend and stay on for the service. So, there we go. Let me take you back to 2002. Anna and I were going out. Anna's my wife, for those of you who don't know. And it sort of came to that point that I wanted to marry Anna, so we went to visit, and I thought, I'll just find a moment to ask my her dad, John, whether I could marry Anna, have his permission. And during the day, John was in his work shed doing a bit of work, and I thought, now's the time just to slip out, have that important conversation with him. And so I did, and I went to his work shed, and he was there, and we were chatting away. And I said something along the lines of, John, please could I have the hand of your daughter in marriage? To which he replied, which one? Because Anna's one of three sisters. And as much as I get on with my sister-in-laws, and one of them's here, the younger one, I'm thankful that day my father-in-law didn't pull a trick on me that Laban did on Jacob, as we heard in our reading. Now, Genesis 29, it's a wonderful story, isn't it? But it's a story which highlights God's providence. It highlights the consequences of our choices. And it highlights the importance of both humility and faith. And in the time that we've got together this morning, we're going to explore the purpose of Jacob's journey to Haran. We're going to explore his dealings with his uncle Laban, who he meets there, and the subsequent consequences of his actions, which remind us that even amidst the chaos, God's faithfulness and blessing remain. So if we could have the next slide, please, Nick. Now, I thought this was quite an appropriate first header. Is this the way not to Amarillo, but to Haran? Now, if you know the song, Is This the Way to Amarillo? It's about someone looking forward to going to a place to meet his sweetheart, the love of his life. Well, we know that as Jacob goes to Haran, he's going to meet Rachel, who will be the love of his life. But it wasn't an easy journey for Jacob. In fact, the journey for Jacob was 450 miles. 450 miles to go and find a wife. And it's the distance from Guildford to Switzerland. Now, I'm thinking about when I first met my wife, we were skiing in Austria. I'm looking at that. Yes, I didn't quite check the mileage, but I could have sort of done similar to what Jacob did, actually. But, you know, it's double the distance that Moses traveled with the Israelites when they went from the land of slavery in Egypt to the promised land. It's a huge, huge distance. Why did Jacob go that far to find a wife? Well, we need to go back to Genesis chapter 27. And if you've been here the last few weeks, you would have known the story of Jacob as it's unfolded. But for those who weren't here last week, a very, very quick recap. Jacob had stolen Esau's blessing. The first child receives the blessing of the father. And Jacob, along with his mother, Rebekah, connived together so that Jacob would pretend to be Esau and get the blessing instead. And this blessing could only be given by the head of the household once. He couldn't give multiple blessings. It couldn't be transferred from one child to another. He couldn't say, that doesn't count. You weren't actually the child who were meant to get it, Jacob. The blessing came on Jacob, depriving Esau. And when Esau found out, he was furious. He was so angry. He's going, just wait until my father's died. After my father has died, I am going to kill Jacob. Esau was that angry. The problem was that Jacob and Esau's mother, Rebecca, overheard Esau's threat. And the problem with Rebecca was that actually she had a favorite. Everything went in favor of Jacob. Jacob was the favored one. Esau didn't get a look in. And so when Rebecca heard that Esau had threatened to kill Jacob, she urged him to flee, not just down the road, but to go to her brother Laban, Jacob's uncle, in Haran, to escape Esau taking his revenge for stealing the blessing. Why there? Well, maybe she thought he was far enough away that Esau wouldn't find him, or maybe that Esau would think it's far too far and wouldn't bother to chase him. But you see, Rebecca's quite manipulative, actually, because rather than just saying, I've told him to flee, she goes and talks to her husband, Isaac, and she says, it's time for Jacob to be married. But, you know, I don't want him to marry any Hittite women around here. They don't believe in God. I want him to marry one of our own. So, you know, send him off to find a wife. Send him off to my family in Haran. Okay, we could say Rebecca's been a little bit sensible there, but actually she's covering her tracks. Also, it's important to know this. Back in Genesis 26, we're told that Esau had married, he hadn't been sent away to Haran to find wives, he'd married two Hittite women, Judith and Basemath. And we're told in chapter 34 that they had been a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And it's interesting, isn't it, that Jacob would also end up marrying two wives, just like Esau did. And those sisters, now wives, they would be at loggerheads of each other. And it was interesting, wasn't it, that in the testimony we heard this morning that struck me when Maya said this. Let me just find it. Morteza, my husband, had similar struggles with the religion we grew up. He had seen how some of its rules caused deep pain, especially for women like my mother. One rule allowed men to have several wives, and he saw how that destroyed families and broke hearts. That's what Maury experienced. And that's exactly what we see here in the book of Genesis. We see having more than one wife, it begins to destroy family life. It breaks hearts. On the way to Haran, though, as we heard last week, Jacob has an encounter with God at a place he names Bethel, as he's running away from the havoc that he's caused through his deception. But that encounter was not dissimilar to that sort of Tarsus experienced on the road to Damascus that we read about in the book of Acts. Because having encountered God, Jacob declares in verse 20 of chapter 28, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I may return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God and this stone that I've set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. Now, it's not perfect, but that sounds a bit like a conversion story to me. A testimony of someone saying, I recognize who you are, God. Now, Jacob's still got a lot to earn because he said, well, God, if you do this, this, and this, I'll follow you. But actually, the Jacob who arrives in Haran is different from the Jacob who fled from his father's tent. The process of change, of transformation, of conversion has begun in Jacob's life. He is not perfect, just like us. He is not perfect, but he is on the way. If we could have the second slide. So we then come to Jacob's deception. On the way to Haran, he's nearly there, and he arrives at a well. Now, a watering well, has quite a lot of significance, especially in the Old Testament. We find that a number of people actually meet their wives in the Bible at wells. Moses met his wife Zipporah at a well in Exodus chapter 2. Jacob and Esau's parents, Isaac, met Rebecca at a well in Genesis 24. And it got me thinking, maybe we should put a well outside the church so that we can grow the number of weddings. Maybe that's one for PCC to look at during my sabbatical. But in the story, we hear, don't we, that he encounters these shepherds. And they're not watering their sheep. And sort of Jacob's going, well, why aren't you watering your sheep? You know, water your sheep, get out into the pastures. And they go, well, no, we're waiting for the last flock to arrive. And when they're here, then we're water. Why was that? Why were they? Were they being lazy? Well, I don't think so. I think the stone, by the way, would have been put over the top to stop that water being polluted. It was to keep all the flies out. It was to stop animals falling in it. But it was a heavy stone, and it needed all the shepherds to lift it off, and they'd do it all in one go, feed all the sheep together, water all the sheep, and then scatter. And they're saying to Jacob, hang on a sec, we're just waiting for the final flock to come, then we will water them. And so in the meantime, you know, here's Jacob going, oh, by the way, do you know a guy called Laban? And I say, yeah, we do. And it's great, Jake, great, I'm in the right place. They go, in fact, his daughter's just, can you just see her? She's just coming up over the hill. And Jacob looks, and all the lovely soft music starts playing in the background, all gets fuzzy, and his heart goes out to her. Wow, what a stunner. What a stunner. We're told that she was lovely in form and beautiful. You know, you sort of think, was this appearance of Rachel by chance, or was this part of God's providence? Well, I think it's very much the latter, isn't it? And Jacob, he's a guy, isn't he? He wants to impress, right, oh, hi, Rachel, let me take this stone off so you can water your sheep. I don't need the other shepherds to help me. Ah, show of strength. You know, Jacob's 77 by this stage. 77 years old, but he has the strength of Samson in this moment. He's out to impress. But there's something even more significant going on here when he encounters Rachel. It is as if he has immediately forgotten his encounter with God that had just happened, and he's drawn to Rachel's physical beauty. He's 77. Most commentators would suggest that she was around 22 years old. There's about a 55-year age difference. Maybe that didn't matter so much in the Old Testament. But interestingly, there is no mention of the Lord in this story, and Jacob doesn't pray for guidance. You know, it got me wondering, I wonder if we can identify in some way with Jacob at this point. Not in terms of his being smitten for Rachel, but rather, it's so easy for us, isn't it, to meet with the Lord when we come together and we pledge ourselves to live for the Lord and not forget him. But the moment we get home, we become distracted. Maybe we end up squabbling. We forget almost instantly what we've heard and experienced. It's as if that encounter with God only exists within the four walls of this church, and we struggle to remember it when we go outside and engage in the world. I wonder if that's just me or whether others can identify with that. But if you contrast what happens with Jacob and Rachel to that of when Abraham sent a servant to find a wife for Isaac, the contrast is stark. Let me just read a couple of verses from Genesis chapter 24, verses 1 to 3. Abraham is Jacob's grandfather. Abraham was now old and well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. He said to the chief servant of his household, the one in charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I'm living, but will go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son Isaac. And then verse 12, the servant prayed, O Lord God of my master Abraham, give me success today and show kindness to my master Abraham. A little later on, at verse 26, on encountering Rebecca, he says, he bows down and worships the Lord, saying, praise be to the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who's not abandoned his kindness and faithfulness to my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives. You know, that whole experience, that whole episode was soaked in petition and awareness of God's leading, of God's sovereignty. There's not a whiff of that, though, here in Genesis 29. There's no evidence that Jacob sought God's advice in finding a wife. And there would be consequences for this in the future. It made me think of that incident in the Gospels where the disciples are in a boat and the waves start to come up. And that's the wrong story on the boat. It's when the disciples are in the boat and Jesus is on the seashore. And Peter gets out of the boat in faith, but soon begins to flounder and drown. And Jacob doesn't know it yet, but he's about to drown in Rachel's father's plans. But what about Laban? What about Laban, this uncle? At first, we might want to see in Laban our favorite uncle. You know, we're told he comes out and he greets his nephew, who he's never seen before, my long-lost nephew. And he kisses him, he welcomes him to his home, he provides full board and lodging. It's the sort of uncle that you want, isn't it? But is it genuine? Is it genuine? Why was he so affectionate? But again, we need to just go back a few chapters to Genesis 24, verse 28. That when Abraham's servant had encountered Rebecca, she'd run back to her house. And we're told that Rebecca had a brother named Laban. And he hurried to meet the man at the spring. And as soon as he had seen the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and had heard Rebecca tell what the man said to her, he went out to the man and found him standing by the camels near the spring. Come, you who are blessed by the Lord, he said. Why are you standing out here? I've prepared the house and a place for the camels. You see, Laban thought, hang on a sec. I remember the last time this happened, it was 100 years ago, interestingly, there was money to be earned from this. And suddenly the pound signs go up in Laban's mind. Hang on a sec, I remember when someone came for my sister and we were in the money. And he seized that opportunity again. He saw that there was wealth to be gained. And so 100 years later, Laban remembers that moment. And he thinks he's in the money again. But as you will find out, Jacob has nothing to offer. Isaac hasn't sent him off with any financial or material gifts. Not that that prevents him from devising a cunning plan. Because Laban was out to get as much for himself as he could at the expense of not one, but both his daughters. And as the story goes, Jacob ends up working for 7 years to earn the hand in marriage of Rachel. But we read these lovely words. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Rachel, the one who was lovely in form and beautiful, unlike Leah, the older sister, who had weak eyes. You've got to question Jacob's bargaining skills here, haven't you? He's the one who cheated his brother out of the birthright, but now he's so smitten. I would have started at a year, not seven. You know, build up a bit. But going straight for 7 years, that's some commitment. But it's only at the end of the 7 years. It's not Laban who says, thank you, Jacob, for serving me for 7 years. Now you may marry my daughter. Jacob has to remind Laban of the deal that they struck. But Laban is devious, and he swaps Rachel for Leah on their wedding night. Which raises the question, was Rachel in on the plan? Did she have a choice? Did she know this all along? If this was the tradition, that community, why had nobody told Jacob this for those 7 years? And the next morning, Jacob wakes up to find he has slept with the older sister. That was the second part of that cue, the slide this morning. What the hell just happened? Our Eurovision Song entry. He would have been saying that. Hang on a sec. I thought I was going to bed with one sister and I've woken up with another. You know, I wouldn't want to be in Jacob's shoes. Jacob the deceiver had been deceived. Jacob, who had tricked his brother out of his birthright and passed himself off as Esau in order to earn his father's blessing, had been out-Jacobed. And the deception, we're told, had taken place in the dark. The commentators have this big discussion about, well, he didn't know who he was spending the night with because it was dark and he would have been wearing a veil. Well, we can discuss whether that was a good excuse or not. But it's interesting because Jacob's deception of Isaac also takes place in the darkness. You say, hang on a second, Nick. I'm looking back here and it doesn't say that happens during nighttime. Do you remember, Isaac was blind. Isaac was in the dark when Jacob deceived him. And here we find Jacob in the dark when Laban deceives him. All Jacob had done to his family was now being done to him. You sort of want to feel sorry for Jacob at this point, don't you? But when you consider how he's behaved so far, there's a sort of sense of poetic justice here. Jacob is getting what he's sown. The consequences. Jacob had been well and truly deceived by Laban, who doesn't come out of this well at all. But he's not finished in making Jacob suffer. So, you know, Jacob complains, hang on a sec, I've got the wrong daughter. Don't worry about that, Laban says. I tell you what, finish your wedding week with Leah. And after the 7 days, I tell you what, you can have another wedding. You can marry Rachel. But you will have to work for me for another 7 years. So Laban gets 14 years free labor out of Jacob. To quote Laurel and Hardy, that's another fine mess you got me into. Spare a thought, though, for Leah, the unloved wife. How must she have felt? Used by her father, rejected by her husband, and hated by her sister. Later on in Leviticus 18, we read that a law got established which specifically forbids taking a wife's sister as a rival wife and having sexual intercourse with her while the original wife is living. Why? Because this sort of thing happens. Family breakdown. But God viewed Leah differently. And God blesses Leah with 4 sons. But she'd always be the other wife. And we see something of her heart later on in the verses that follow from our passage today. I wonder, who are the Leahs around us today? Who are the ones who are overlooked and misunderstood? How do our choices affect others? How can we make others feel valued? Perhaps we can identify with Leah in some way. She may have been used, though, by Laban, ignored by Jacob, except to bear children for him, but she was loved by God. And if there's something in Leah that you identify with this morning, know this, that you are deeply loved and valued by God, with a passion that is greater than anything any living human can offer. And so my final point this morning. Jacob is not alone when it comes to God using people for a greater purpose, despite the wrong choices we make. You know, it'd be very easy to judge Jacob harshly, but if we do so, I think there's a lot of characters we find in the scriptures we'd also need to judge. Think of David, for instance, an adulterer and a murderer. But God used him in an amazing way. We think of Samson. We think of the Apostle Paul. God's hand is present throughout Jacob's journey, even in the midst of the mistakes and the challenges he faces. You know, God's not mocked, and Jacob will eventually reap what he's sown to some extent, because his choices have consequences. But God nevertheless provides for him. I also want to say that sometimes, if we're honest, our lives and the families might be a bit like Jacob's. No family's perfect. We've all got our challenges. But God is good, and the words of the psalmist say that we can trust God in God's unfading love and rejoice in his salvation. Psalm 13, verse 5. God has a plan for Jacob's life. It's not without purpose, despite his human frailties. And in the same way, God chooses to use us despite our weaknesses and lack of faith at times. God used the circumstances of Jacob's life to further his plan for that lineage of Abraham and to bring about his blessing. God was in the purpose of shaping Jacob, who would in time become the father of the nation of Israel. And like Jacob, God is in the business of shaping us into being the kind of people God can use to be a blessing to others and to help build his kingdom. We are, each one of us, a work in progress. And so is everyone else around us. So let's be patient with one another. We need humility and faith in God's plan, even when things don't go as we expect. And when things seem unclear, we're called to trust in God's faithfulness and in the bigger picture of his plan. And even in the midst of trials and difficulties, God's grace and blessing are there for all who trust in him. Amen.